Welcome to episode 95. This episode is sponsored by W Lloyd Services. For all building and landscaping works across the southeast of England, they offer quality services at quality prices. If, like me, the thought of painting your eyelids shut is more appealing than fixing up the house yourself, it's professionals like W Lloyd Services who you need when it comes to home and office improvements or building from scratch. Call 07949 380 775 for your building and landscaping needs. Sometimes an album comes along that really resonates for all the right reasons, and for me, the upcoming debut from Chappaqua Wrestling called Plus Ultra is that very album. It's out on April 14th, it's chock-a-block full of melody, sing-along, scream-along, guitar fuzz, reverbed vocaled, drum-banging, grunge-tinged, shoegazing brilliant tunes to fall in love to reminisce on like the album has been around for 30 years, even though it sounds new and fresh at the same time. Get it in your ears. Next week sees me live on stage at the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square to host the one and only Brian Blessed. Tickets are available through my website realfeedback.co.uk or by doing a little search, you want me to type words, on the Prince Charles Cinema website. And please follow me on Twitter, Insta and Facebook at realfeedbackpod. You can pre-order Plus Ultra now, or if it's after April 14th, you can buy it in a shop, have it delivered to your door, or get a digital download where you have to squint to see the artwork. Over to my chat now with Charlie and Jake. This isn't an interview, this is a conversation. This is Real Feedback.
Oh mate, we're well oiled now. We're a bit of a machine with these. We've done about 30.
So, oh my god!
Yeah, they've been all time, right. All times of the day, every day of the week. This is a quite nice time, to be fair.
Okay, that's good. I'll try and come up with some different questions. I definitely won't be asking you about the band name because that's probably the one that you get the most.
Yeah. Oh mate, we get it so much. Yeah, I mean, it's fair. It's a fucking ridiculous name, isn't it? So you know, people want to know what. Like poisoned us to choose such a silly name, but got a little bit. But I think Charlie's joining as well.
Yes.
I'll just ask him now.
Oh, here he comes. You all right, Charlie?
Hey, how's it going? You all right, mate?
Nice to meet you. You all right? We're just, I just found out you do about 30 of these. You didn't say a day, did you, Jake? Because that
No, right. No, fucking hell.
Because you wouldn't get to do absolutely anything else with your day.
Yeah. We've done a lot. And like they've kind of blurred into one. But we did like a, I guess it was all kind of leading up to like this like Radio 1 we did last night. As we did with Jack Saunders. And but like we've done so many now that we were just like flying off each other, like pointing each other around the table, like you go. Getting pretty smooth at it.
We did about 10, but by the fifth one, we just knew who was going to answer what question.
Yeah,
kind of what sort of questions you're going to get, for you guys, it must be, oh, here comes the one about the band name.
Yeah, you can't expect it, but that's what's nice to be on a podcast. It's good.
And you can say fuck. You can say whatever you like on a podcast.
Yeah, it's just more. It's way more conversational, and just like yeah, it's way more chilled. Whereas like some of the more like sort of this is an interview. It's very like, well, of course we met. And it's just like big, you know. It's just like it gets a little bit. It's a little bit.
Also, they also get.
So it's good to have a nice.
They get chat up. The normal interviews, like rather than podcasts, get chopped up. So yeah. You know, you come out of it, you're like, yeah, I absolutely spanked that answer. Then you listen back to it, like that's not what I said in that order, was it?
So how are you with live ones? I mean, because you've done sort of Radio X and stuff like that. Is there an additional pressure? Don't sound stupid. Don't swear. Don't this and that.
Yeah, we haven't sworn yet live. It's not happened. But you know, when we've done a few live music sessions where. We've got a few lyrics in the songs which have swear words because we're really cool, and we've had to like train ourselves, like we did it and made a veil the other day, have to train ourselves to then miss that swear word out in the phrase of the lyric, which is actually harder than stopping yourself swearing in a normal chit chat. But no, I think we get pretty smooth at it.
We didn't have to
go full Ice Cube. It was a good day, clean version. When it's like, have you heard that?
No.
So like, it's just so funny because you know the explicit version so well, And then like the clean version is like, he like replaces all these words like with really like friendly, family friendly words. And you're like, why don't sing this song?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, that's just what it is.
So, there like, must be something in your catalogue that you can sing instead of this. Yeah.
BBC the other day, we were like, we just realized like the pinnacle of like the crescendo, the intro of Wide Asleep has, you know, I don't, you know, I really don't give a fuck about is the lyric that it then drops on. And we were like, what should we swap? And we were like, should we do it? Should we do that kind of version of it? Like, you know, I really don't give a crumbs about. We're like, that's so lame. Yeah, fuck that.
When they do it in films as well, I remember watching The Big Lebowski, and there's a bit where it was on TV, and there was a bit where John Goodman smashes up someone's car, and in the original film, he says, "This is what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass." And they changed it to this is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps. Okay, so if you find a stranger in the Alps, you get a bat and you smash the shit out of
the
car.
And it's always like the weirdest like vocal dub mix as well. It comes out of nowhere and they sound like some sort of alien.
Yeah.
Like really normal, like this is where you find it in the Alps. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, Bob's off today, just get the caretaker and he'll do it. That's fine.
Yeah.
So how was Maida Vale?
Yeah, it went really well. Went out last night on Radio 1.
Oh, it was fully live.
Well, no, we did record it on the Monday, and then it went out broadcast last night at 8 PM. I think we were on air actually like 9 PM, but it was really good, mate. Like, we went there before a few years ago when the band was like kind of, we just left Manchester where we started it, and then we just sort of got our first sort of wave of being a much heavier band, where we are sort of more now sonically than when we started as a bit more lighter. So the last time we went there was nice, because it was the first wave of us being a bit sort of like finding our feet, and now we've come back and it was like we felt like we're really at like the, you know, that sort of the core of what we are, and just sort of very much at like the best place for us sonically. So it was good to go back there like really confident of what we're doing, and like with a lot of momentum, and like with like, you know, sort of great musicians with us, and it just felt brilliant. Yeah, was a lot of fun. We loved it. So fucking good going there, and the fact it's being torn down is just like an absolute crime.
What? Oh, I didn't know this.
It's going. Yeah, they're building a brand new one like down the road, so it's gonna literally be Maida Vale too. But you walk in there, and it's like you walk down this long corridor, and you've got room by room, so it's like a really long building. Come into the entrance and you go down this long corridor, and you've got like the hall where the symphony orchestra go in, and that, and you've got like the different kind of recording rooms, and you go down to unit 4, which is like the classic one with the balcony. But on the way down there, like, you've got photos of Paul McCartney, like John Lennon, like everyone that's played there, but you feel like you're walking through like the ghosts of BBC's past. Like, you're just like, you can feel the history like in the carpet. It's proper, like, that sounded pretty emotional, but yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you get into the room and there's like the most BBC things ever, like an old telephone, which is like an old talkback to the studio, which looks like a fucking like aliens telephone from like the 1950s.
Has a winder on it.
Yeah. And like there's a mic stand that I used last time I was in there, because I was in a booth last time. So I was playing an acoustic. And I said to the guy, like, how old is this mic stand? He was like, Paul McCartney used that mic stand here 50 years ago. I was like, whoa. And then it was just me just spitting all over it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You know, you go to, it might still be Maida Vale by name, this new one, but rather than saying Paul McCartney was here 5 years ago, you're going to say, oh, no, this is a fish and chip shop 5 years ago. It is about the history, and it will affect your performance, knowing about that musical history that came before it, rather than...
It's just part of this massive wave in the UK where people just, like... I don't know where it is, if it's like top down, if it's just like there's not enough money there, or if it's just people, we don't care enough about our cultural history. We just really don't. Like, Maida Vale being turned into houses, which I think it's going to be some housing. Like, it's just like there's so many other places that should be torn down for that housing. Like, it's not that much space.
Yeah.
And it's just so important for like what this country is. And like, you know, like there's pictures of the White Stripes playing there, the Strokes, like all these huge American rock bands that came over and like had these amazing career-changing things that happened in London. And like, as Jake said, like the Beatles, like it's like countless, and it's all in that space. And it does matter that it was in that space.
Absolutely.
And like, it's just such a shame. It's like, what if, like, if that isn't sacred, like, what is? Do you know what I mean? Like, how?
I just don't feel like you have that in Italy or something, you know, or like France.
We had the like pleasure of going to Abbey Road as well 2 or 3 years ago when we first started out, and they wouldn't take that place down. And like, it just shows you like where that's privatized and where BBC is BBC, and you've got to keep contemporary and keep modern. You know, they're like, you know, we can take down Main Avail and sell off the housing, but they'd never do that to. There's some places that you would just never do that to. And Main Avail is in that pool because it will be a place that in 20, 30 years, even if it was still there, not being used, people would visit it because of its history. It is a shame. It's like, yeah, fair enough. There's old venues like in London or across the UK that get torn down and people get upset about it, but it's normally because they're shit. But Maid of Vale is just like spot on.
It seems like one of the ones that is a dead cert to stay, doesn't it?
Because there's a load of venues that are like going and like studios, but it's like, it's not like people are tearing them down and being like, oh, but don't worry, we're going to create like a massive new one that's amazing. It's just like a kind of like half-assed attempt usually gets put up. So it's just such a shame. It's just like one by one, just can't get my head around it, considering how important it is to our culture and our like, what's left of our world standing. It's like, don't let it go. Yeah. Like, are you serious?
I'm really worried about Brixton Academy because of this whole thing. Obviously, a tragedy happened there, but there's word that that might not stay. And I'm still holding out that somehow I will get on that stage. It won't happen. But if it's not there, it definitely won't happen.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's one of the irreplaceable... That's like an irreplaceable venue as well. Yeah.
But then Astoria went, didn't it, years ago? So... And that was
we never got to go to Astoria. Well, I didn't, but Brixton Academy, it's such a shame because we luckily played there just before Christmas. We supported Blossoms, that is an amazing venue. It's proper old school, like the backstage, the front of the stage obviously is huge, like the massive room. It's got that lovely like banked kind of flooring. And like it's built like a castle out the front, but the back of it is like an actual rabbit's warren. Like you get so confused walking around. And the tragedy was so surprising to us because when we were there, we thought like, well, obviously, you know, what events happened that day, like who knows what went down. But like when you were backstage, it was so secure and like the whole place seemed so smooth and like well ran and like professional. So then when that happened, like 2 or 3 weeks after us playing there, we were so surprised. Such a tragedy as well. It's so sad that it happened, and sure, it wasn't anything to do with like the people that work in the venue, obviously. But I don't actually know anything about the story, to be honest. But
it was like the security were like just taking some backhanders and letting too many people in. So sad. Unnecessary.
Promoters like, selling too many tickets or something. I don't know. But
it reflects so badly. It does reflect so badly on that venue, like so badly. And it's so good. Like, you know, I'm sure we've all seen like countless shows there. Like it's just like one of the best escapist venues because it's huge, it's tiered, and I like how inclusive it is because everyone can see, like everyone, because sight, like people that are really small can see because of like the tiered standing. And I don't think there's that many venues like that, and that's such a small feature, but it really makes a difference because everyone's engaged.
Yeah,
it's like it's so good. And the sound's massive.
The sound was so big. Like I don't think we really on stage, you know, the stage sound is so different to what goes out. But we spoke to our manager after. He was like, yeah, it was fucking loud. Don't really know what was going on at times, but it sounded great. And I think between the lines, it was so boomy and so loud that, you know, I think the Blossoms fans were a bit blown away because they get on stage with their flares and, you know, looking like 80s rock stars and then play, you know, a very different kind of more relaxed, like contained sound. So I think, yeah.
But everyone was deaf by that point and didn't hear a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what, like, some of the reactions when we started playing the riff and culture was pretty hilarious. They were like,
yeah, yeah. But I think people were like, are we at the wrong gig?
Mummy.
But some of it works really well. Like, there is a big crossover. Like, I get why we were booked to play with Blossoms. But some of our stuff, like we're not going to hold back from like our favorite songs that we do that are heavier because some people would really like it. But it was funny to just like all distortion pedals on, feedback, like absolute chaos. Yeah, and people are like, oh my God. Yeah.
So we were in the pub like 2 or 3 weeks later and some guy tapped me on the shoulder. And it was just as me and Charlie were meeting. Charlie was coming into the pub And then some guy tapped me on the shoulder and was like, Chappaqua Wrestling. And I was like, oh, you're right, mate. Like, have you seen us? And he said, yeah, I saw you at Brixton Academy. I work for Fender. And I went down and, you know, I actually kind of just went because I was going on a work thing. And I was so, so happy to hear some really fucking heavy grunge music. I was like, okay, nice. We made one fan.
Do you live in the area then? Do you live in Southeast London?
No, I'm North London. Yeah, I mean, I've been to Brixton. I saw Mogwai there years ago, and fucking hell, you talk about loud.
The end of that gig,
he just, I think it's Stuart, isn't it? He just took his guitar with whatever pedals he had on, and he just put it in front of the amp and just walked off. And the sound that came out was just, it was like the gates of hell had opened up, and everyone's just standing there, all really cool, just going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I knew that was the end. So I was like, someone might come on, like, let's go before the crowd, you know. And we got to the front door of Brixton Academy, and I could still hear like this sound of Satan coming out from the thing. I was like, and they're just probably backstage cracking open a lager, just going, I wonder how long they're going to stand there and listen to that.
I saw them in Brighton 3 weeks ago at the Dome, and it gets like why they're so good and they're so clever, like the dynamic range, like they start off soft, clean, like telly, left, right, super, super clean, and it just builds, and you just like, it gets to a point of like volume that you're like, okay, it can't get any louder. Then one of another one gets on the bass guitar, and there's two bass playing sub bass, and it just like drives through you, and you're like, you can feel your organs rattling, and you're like, oh my god. And I looked around, there was like this 75-year-old geezer on my right, and I was like, it's gonna fucking kill him, man. Like, my organs are like about to implode. And mate, like they turn it up another level. We've always loved Mogwai, and we haven't really like spoke or listened to them about them that much. And then I randomly got a ticket, and then since then it's been absolutely sucked back into them, because there's so much music to listen to. There's just so much depth, and to be honest, like it was really nice seeing them like a few weeks ago, because when we're getting close to the album, you know, you're, as an artist, you're like, oh my god, you know, you just want to put out more music. Like, how are we going to do it? Like, what happens after album one? You know, all these natural kind of prangs and anxieties in your head. But then you go see Mogwai and you look through their back catalogue of how many albums they put out, and you're like, no matter what happened with them, you know, their listeners, their label, their management, they were obviously just like, we're going to put out as much music as we fucking want. Yeah. And they just did it for 20 years. And there they are now, just melting people's brains at Brighton Dome.
Killing pensioners.
Yeah. Maybe that's the only way the pensioner can feel anything. He's so dead inside that he has to see Mogwai just to get anything.
Well, my dad was only about 64, but he's nearly a pensioner, so I'm sorry for listening, Dad.
Well, there's another band that I read you guys like that I've never met anyone else that has even heard of them, and I don't even know how to say the band name, even though I've seen them twice. Dive, D-I-I-V.
Dive. We love Dive.
Yeah, because when I read Dive, I was like, oh my God, someone else is, you know, I can't remember the venue in London I saw, but I also saw them in Latitude in the middle of a forest.
Oh, amazing.
And I fucking love that band. And when I read you guys like them, I was like, ah, okay.
Love them, mate. They're so good.
We got onto Dive probably like when everyone else kind of did in like
Captured Tracks.
Yeah, 2011, Captured Tracks, when like Mac DeMarco had his moment, and like Beach Fossils. Because they're all signed to that New York label, and we just like obviously Mac DeMarco and Beach Fossils and Wild Nothing a little bit before them had their like big explosion, and then when Mac DeMarco really blew up, it kind of like put all the focus on, even though he's from Canada, but he was signed to that New York label, and everyone was like really just focused on what there was happening then. Like 2012, 2013 was like absolute like golden era of like kind of indie alternative rock coming out of New York. So much good stuff there. And Dive he was the drummer. Cole, the front guy, was the drummer for Beach Fossils' first album, and then moved over to start up Dive. And then that first album, Ocean, is just like so amazingly cool. And it has been copied a lot, like in a nice way. You do hear a lot of British bands like sound a little bit like it, but then their vocals are just like get really like really kind of fuckboy as well after. So you're like, oh, these guitars are cool, and then you're like, ah, now they're singing like
and you ruined it.
And you ruined it. still am a little wet. They dive a lot amazing because, like, I don't know if you've seen online YouTube. I mean, we were teenagers when we got into them, so we were like fucking, you know, like you end up just searching all kinds of stuff online on YouTube and like finding everything you can out about them. And we were really into them. And there's a video of him from Dive. I can't remember his name. And playing as in a band called Shitfather, and it's Mac DeMarco on drums.
Shitfather, did you say?
Yeah, it's Shitfather. The guy from Wild Nothing on bass, and Dive on guitar and lead singing, and then the lead singer from Beach Fossils also playing guitar. So it was like a little, you know, like captured tracks, like New York supergroup. And they do a cover of a song called Only a Shadow by one of our other favorite bands, Cleaners from Venus, if you've heard of them, Martin Newell. Check them out. And that's kind of how we got put on to Cleaners from Venus, because they did a cover of this track. And then Cleaners from Venus, we absolutely love, like personally become one of my favorite artists. And Cleaners from Venus then did something like a documentary back on Captain Track. So it was all some big circle because of this silly band that they just made for the day called Shitfather. But if you type in Shitfather live YouTube, like check them out. That's a super group.
I would definitely put live YouTube because I feel like if I just wrote the word Shitfather, I'd get something else entirely.
Yeah, you might get some dodgy stuff.
Yeah. My kids looking through my history. Daddy, what's it's nothing. We're 20 minutes in. We haven't even mentioned you guys yet, which is fine. But
that's all good.
I'm going to get the gush out of the way. So what I normally do when I speak to someone is, there's a few certain bands where I particularly like their album and I get to tell them that, which is nice. Your band, I have not been this excited about hearing new music for years. And I've never ever said that to a guest. I fucking love your band so much. It's slightly sickening.
Thank you. Oh, I really appreciate that.
Well, no, you just saying about listening to these bands that sound a bit like Dive and then the singing comes in, you go, you fucked it up. One of the things that you guys have got, it's the perfect marriage of your songwriting and sounds and how it's been recorded as well. The vocals, it just, everything just slots perfectly into place for my little brain. So I'm probably going to have to cut some of that out because it sounds too gussy. But seriously. Open with that.
Close with that, middle with that. And then if you just cut some shots of us just flexing our biceps, that'd be good.
Well, I used to be a Photoshop compositor, so I could just get you on, you know, get you on some bodybuilding shots and
tiny little pants, massive armadillos in our hands.
So,
mate. No, but for real, Kevin, okay, that's amazing to hear, man. It's really, really appreciate that, and we're both really excited, but on the other side, there's so much pressure and it's so like real right now, and we've spent so much time trying to make it happen. So sometimes you're like, whoa, like, are we mad putting so much effort and time into this? And then to hear feedback from, you know, avid music lovers like yourself that's that of that high praise, it's really does mean a lot. So thank you very much.
Well, I mean, no, you're more than welcome. Because the songwriter, I mean, even from the opening of Full Round Table, I was just like, yeah, I'm in with this. And then Culture, for example, was like sort of Bleach era Nirvana. And then, and I'm trying to work out the time. I've been playing guitar for 30 years. I'm trying to work out the time signature you got going on in that song. I'm trying to drum along to it. I'm going, I can't fucking do it. It's just, you know.
You know what, mate? It's Culture is a really funny one because I hoped it would have that effect because it's actually, it's really actually not as complex as it seems. But basically what I did was, when I was trying to demo it, I just accidentally moved the snare into the wrong place and heard it. It was like, that's weird. And it sounded completely wrong. But when you then put an accent on the bass and the guitar at the same time to make it sound on purpose, it then makes it sound like it's got this mad, crazy time signature, which it actually doesn't. So when I showed it to the band and we were in the process of like practicing tracks for the album, they were like, we're recording the album in 2 weeks now. We're not going to learn this. This just sounds like a fucking nightmare of a song. I was like, trust me, just all play with John on this snare. And then it started to work. And then, and then we got in the studio and we were just like, let's just make it like full beans, full, like, you know, like noise, and we just like doubled up the guitars, made it real grungy, and it's come out really nicely, and it's actually super easy to play. So when we see you, I'll show you that.
Well, yeah, you say super easy, and I now feel even worse about myself. I've said it again, and I missed it again. Fuck.
It's like we had an 8-hour long practice before, like 2 weeks before we recorded. Like a lot of practices happened, obviously. And then right at the end of it, Jake's like, yeah, like we're all knackered. And Jake's like, yeah, I've got this like really easy new one, you know, it's like, you know, it's really simple, like it's not gonna be that hard. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just come downstairs. I'll get a coffee, I'll come back up. And John's got his shirt off, which means something's like, something's happened that's intense. And John's like, fuck, you're all right. And he's like, and I'm like, is this easy? And John's like, fucking shredding this new beat. I'm like, what is this? What are we about to do right now? And so I don't know, it might be simple in your head, Jake, but it's a fucking nightmare. Yeah, no, what I'm trying to say is that there's no musical genius behind it. Honestly, it sounds more dressed up than it is in terms of time signature. But I'm no like fucking Beethoven, you know, time signature composer. I just moved the snare in the wrong place.
Yeah, I just had an accent with the, yeah, that's great. Well, I've never been in a band with two people that write the main songwriters. It was always me that wrote the songs, but obviously everyone contributes and stuff. So what is it like when one of you comes to the other one and they've got a real cracking tune and go, Charlie, if Jake comes to you, do you get excited when Jake plays that? You go, that is, yeah, that's a tune, like let's work on that. Or is it a bit more just, let's see what we can do. What's the process?
It massively depends. I mean, like the first thing to know is that we both write so much. So like, you love things for different reasons, like and there's liking songs because it's like a song Jake will write that's like really like acoustic-y and nice, or it's a bit like just weird and vibey, or it's just like kind of a bit dark. And then there's ones that's like the Chappaqua songs that we are kind of like wanting to make statements with, which is kind of what we've been trying to sort of like do. Like, and kind of trying to focus on with the album, you know, to really try and make your first album like a big thing, and kind of with the second album as well. So if Jake comes to me with, you know, we love all of each other's songs, but what generally happens is that for most of the songs, one of us will write like 80, let's say in recent years it's been like this. When we lived together it was different. But recently it's more like someone will write 70, 80% of the track, and then the other person will kind of like sort of finish it with them. And then that's pretty like half and half how that goes. But sometimes we'll write things completely together, and that's lovely. But just where we don't live together anymore, like we used to live together in Manchester and like in Brighton as well, but now we don't. So we just practically don't sit down in our pants after every night out with the guitars. So
there's a lot of nudity with this band I'm hearing, with the songwriting process. John with his shirt off and you in your pants.
Hey, it's can't help it. Things get hot. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's like,
to add to that, like,
depends what we're doing.
I mean, like, in short answer to that as well, like, it's amazing, like, because I don't hear many other writers. I don't hear many other artists that have two writers that write in such a similar style that can work together so easily on finishing a track. Normally what you have is, you know, if you've got two writers in the band, you've got a lyricist and you've got, you know, more of a composer kind of thing. But whereas me and Charlie, you know, we both lead on putting together a song properly, writing it in a similar style. Like we've got such similar tastes naturally, where we've listened to so much music over the years that we both love. And we started, you know, like our musical journey together when we were about 14. So we're so in sync with what we both like that generally, I think if we were to have a look, you know, fly on the wall in other band practices, that I think we'd probably find that it's pretty smooth in terms of how we put output songs. Like, you know, it is amazing because, you know, sometimes, you know, Charlie will come show me a song and I'll just be like, that's fucking amazing. That's done. You know, nice one, mate. You know, and that's such a good thing to have, because it, you know, relieves the pressure, because I can imagine if you're a solo writer in a band project, you know, you've got a lot of pressure on you to deliver tunes again and again and again, and it can cause friction in different ways. And, you know, obviously there's friction with two songwriters in the band as well, because you naturally want to get your songs in the mix. And we've been really lucky. Like, we've managed to put out an album which is just a complete mix of each other's songs, mix of singles of each other's as well. And there's a real, like, a nice blend of each other's vocals and lyrics and compositions across the album. I think we've been really lucky. And hopefully as well, you know, album two, we'll get back in the room together into our pants and we'll get on the acoustic guitars hungover again, because album one, we weren't really able to do that because it was lockdown. So we naturally started writing separately. And then we both naturally got better at, you know, composing and demoing and structuring ourselves. But yeah, I think album two is going to be more in the room, full band. Now that we're lubed up and we've got like the final iteration of Chakra Wrestling that we love, I think album two is going to be more band and me and Charlie putting our heads together again.
By the way, I think we've got a lot of songs for album two, like in contention, which I think we both think are like stronger than the first album, you know, which is exactly what we want to be doing, is only releasing music that we fucking love and that, like, really believe is our best foot forward. But I think it'd be nice to, because we couldn't do it for lockdown, is just like sort of go out, maybe just do like a kind of writing thing away somewhere and just sort of like hunker down with all the songs. And because lockdown last year, like, we, some of the songs we did, like when we went into the studio, it was like, oh, I wish I knew this song like fucking 20 times more than I did, just like emotionally and stuff like that, because it was like, I do know it, but like if we really had like more intimate time to play it together and just like keep going through it, just, you always new ideas just like happen. And but yeah, so we actually got the last album out fairly quickly, like in that sense, from learning each other's stuff during lockdown. But it'd be nice to have a bit more breathing room with the next one.
Was it true that you guys were intended on just recording three tracks and then you ended up doing 12, and then your manager phoned EMI? I mean, it sounds like the dream signing. Your manager phoned EMI and went, listen to this, like Back to the Future. And then, yeah, we'll have some of that, please. Yeah. Is that really what
it was? Yeah.
Hey, Marvin.
Yeah.
Marvin.
Yeah,
so good. I got these new guys.
You chuck buried it into EMI.
It was like the process was super fast it finally happening when the album was done. But, you know, the album took like a year to kind of properly get together, organize, go down to the studio in Wales, hang out the sheep, record it, you know, mix, master. We actually only recorded the album for 12 days. We're actually only in the studio for 12 days and delivered, you know, 10 or 11 songs, which ended up being on the album. So it was so efficient and so slick that we, you know, we didn't have time or money. And that meant that we didn't think too much about the process. And I think that really helped the music, because most of the tracks are very unproduced. And, well, you know, there's quite a lot of production, maybe some more of the singles, but the album tracks are very straight up, you know, two guitars, bass, drums, keys and vocals, and there's not much to them, which I think it really benefited by having very little time and money to do it. And then we finished the album and our manager literally said to us, like, you know, I think this is too good to self-release. And we said, all right, what does that mean? He's like, you know, we'll send it around to a few labels and, you know, see who's bited, see who's hungry. And then next thing we know, you know, we get some offers, and then EMI say that they want to sign us. And word through the grapevine is that the guy who signed us, Joe from EMI, A&R guy, he sent it to his boss, the head of EMI, and said, what about this then? And then the boss, the big man at EMI, just turned around and said, get it done. All right.
Oh, fucking brilliant.
pretty mad. And then, yeah, it's been good. They're a good label. You know, we don't have anything to compare it to, but we like them and we're getting on well with them.
Well, I was coming to Powerhouse, which is actually where I'm going to be doing some live shows as well. But then Hope and Anchor came up and I'm like, I'm having some of that. So I'm coming to Hope and Anchor next week.
Yes, man.
Because I used to play there a long time, you know, nearly 20 years ago, but I used to play Hope and Anchor a lot. So that is, I mean, you talk about history. Hope and Anchor is absolutely dripping in it. What's the plan for the party? I'm assuming you guys are playing.
We're going to play. Yeah. Okay. We'll play, we'll do, yeah, I think we're going to have some fun, do some of the songs. We're going to try and control ourselves because we're going to be so giddy that the album's actually out. You know, we want to let our hair down. But yeah, it's going to be good. We're going to have a musician called Alice SK, who she used to play with us live. She's a good friend of ours. She's a really good singer-songwriter, and she's going to support us, which would be really nice as a kind of holistic thing, because she's like a, you know, part of our journey, and she played a lot of shows with us, and she's really good. So she'll play on the night, and I think we're just going to get we're going to try and get a fuckload of, I don't know, balloons or fucking bunting or some shit. I don't even know.
That's what rock and roll's missing these days, is bunting. Go on.
It's a party, isn't it? I know. We're all gonna everyone's going to be in leather. There's going to be smoking crack. We're going to be doing tattoos. And there's going to be bunting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, in the Brighton show, Coco, who plays keys with us, she's also a DJ. She has quite a lot of she's into some very, very interesting kind of lo-fi techno or like ambient sort of stuff, and it's really, really cool. So she's going to do some DJing at the Brighton show because we got a later curfew, but Hope and Anchor, we got to be out there by 11, so no DJing. So we're just gonna get everyone down, have a load of beers, celebrate the album, play a fucking load of music, and crank it nice and loud with bunting. So it's going to be a good time.
Well, I always, like, going back to the Gush, I was going, oh, yeah, I've heard the album 10 times or whatever. I've heard the album. I mean, because this is actually the third attempt to speak to you guys. EMI cancelled me twice. So third time lucky. But so it means I've had longer with the album. I don't know, 50 times? I don't know. It's just been, what should we put on? Let's put that on again, please. Yeah, it's Practical Wrestling. Thanks very much. And then, like, the Rift. I looked at some of your videos and I thought, well, your hair's quite different in that video, Charlie, the Rift.
I've gone through everything, mate. I've had, like, my hair's had a midlife crisis or something because, like, I've just completely changed. But no, I don't know. Yeah, I think I did have really long hair, and then that's it. It just started. I've got really thick hair. So when we were playing live, anything through it, and it would just sort of explode like a lion's mane. So I just had to get rid of it.
Mozart.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You're calling me Mozart after a big gig. It's fucking like mane of hair. I just had to get rid of it. Might come back.
Yeah, he looked like Mozart / Go Compare / I don't know.
Yeah,
like, it was a good look.
I went a bit, sorry, YouTube rabbit holes. I went a bit of rabbit hole with you guys, and the live thing on ice that you did. I wanted to know, how was that problematic for you? You made it look like there were no issues at all. How did that happen? Why did you think ice rink?
It was just like, we wanted to do a live video, like a live session, so people can get excited. And then there's like been some really cool like sessions on YouTube that we love, of bands doing something in like a bit of a kind of wacky place, because it just gets people like more interested. Like King Krul did one on the moon, which was like pretty fun. And the Cribs did a kind of funny one as well. So we were just like, let's do something nice. And then I don't know who pitched the idea to do it on ice, but we just thought this would be really blue and like just kind of vibey, like on an ice rink. And it was great. Like, to be fair, it was organized really well. The only thing that was a difficulty on the day was just running out of time, because we had it from the morning until 6 p.m. And at 6 p.m., it was at Slough Ice Rink, and all like the avid ice skaters were like, and like, you know, and the little kids ice skaters, like mums and dads were there, who were angry, like get this band off the ice. And like we really didn't have enough time to like go over and do like more filming.
So were you playing while they're at the kids and parents are at the sides of the thing?
We did Wayfinding, which is going to come out soon. That is literally got, if you turn the camera around, there'd just be like angry parents like knocking on the door, like, get off the ice.
Fucking
that up. Was really jarring. That was really jarring, because we can only do it in one take because we run out of time. They're like, right, this is the take. And it's just people like, go.
Yeah.
So that was, but it was fun. Nothing really went wrong. It was just like, we just wanted more time. But I think that's the same for everything, isn't it? You know,
it was -8 degrees. So vocally, it was like impossible to get warmed up. You'd sing one verse and then you'd stop for 10 seconds to play a guitar part and your voice is just completely gone again. It was so dumb. But we made it work. Made it work.
You made it work indeed. So my favourite album of the year, Wayfinding, my favourite chorus of the year, Culture, my favourite riff of the year. I'm going to find some more just to really make me sound like an arsehole. But,
love it. Thank you.
So Plus Ultra is out on the 14th of April, which must be after however long, it must be so weird that you go, everyone's going to hear it now. Is it a weird feeling now that the whole world can hear every single song on that album that has been just your baby for so long?
Yes, it is a weird feeling. It is surreal, the definition of surreal, because it's like one of those feelings, a little bit like moving away somewhere or like going on holiday. You're like, you've got such an idea of how it's going to be, like when it happens. And then when it's actually happening, you're like, oh, it's just like normal life. Like, it's actually not as... So it's like, it's kind of like, is the album coming out? Like, what's the difference? What is it going to mean? I think when it's really going to change and when it's going to really feel like, oh my fucking God, it's happened, is when we go into a record store and see it and it's like people are buying it and then you like are like there. And of course, the biggest thing is when you just get to play it live to people and people are actually knowing it and not like, what? What song is that? That's going to be unbelievable. It's like, we just really just hope and we're just going to work like our asses off just so that people can hear it, because we really, you know, believe in it. We are really proud of what we've done and we just want more people to hear it. So it is a surreal feeling having those little perks of like being able to go see it in a store, buy your own record. That's going to be a novelty. And then go to gigs and like have people know the songs. They're going to be two huge actual changes. But like on the actual day, it'd be funny to just sit there and be like,
it's out.
I'll make a coffee.
It's gonna be like psychologically a massive shift in our lives, really, because for the last 2 years everything's been leading up to this, so you naturally become so used to, right, we've got to get ready for the album. And now all of a sudden that's changing into, this album's out and it's like a declaration of like what we've been doing for the past 2-3 years as artists. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, it's like a documentation of like actually like the last 10 years of our kind of friendship, like just being put out into the world. And, you know, it's no longer ours. It's, you know, it's theirs or yours. And it's strange. It's going to be, yeah, hard to grapple with. But yeah, as Charlie says, it's like, it's those moments like going down to a record store, picking up yourself. But yeah, especially like the tour, like the first UK tour, we were playing it to people that didn't know it and they were still backing it. So it feels like it's going to be absolutely like raucous and mad when we're actually playing it to a room packed of people that know it back to front. So I'm just absolutely excited. Going to put my feet up on the day, have a cup of tea and just try to be proud.
To be fair, in all the hysteria and like build up and like marketing and like all of the like, you know, work we've been doing to so that people can hear it, like I almost haven't even had time to think about like this sort of the mental kind of like
impact that we have
in a good way and like what it kind of means, because like it is, you're right Jake, it is like an album we've been writing since we've like met each other and like it's always been the dream to do.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
is going to be like, oh, because like you get so caught up in like the, you know, like the details and the kind of like little things that you have to do to just get the album out and so people can hear it and social media and like, you know, all this stuff, but you kind of like sometimes as an artist kind of don't have the luxury to really like appreciate the art of it and what it means. Like, you know, it's going to feel amazing and it's just so layered, and you know, everyone wants to put an album out, and it because we've had to wait so long because we took such a long route and a good route, like really really proud, like happy of our route here, but we didn't just go like, you know, blast one out. It feels like it's the only album we've ever done, and for how long we've played together, it is quite, you know, it is quite odd that it's taken that long, but I think it was because we just wanted it to be so, well, I don't know, just right. have like enough impact. Yeah, exactly. But it's going to feel like so good.
You know, we're 27 now, but when we were like, you know, 18, 19, you know, we, you know, we wouldn't even dream of like putting an album out. That was like such a huge concept. But then as we got stuck into music, 23, 24, I remember thinking like, all I ever want to do is just do our own UK headline tour. And then you do that and that's amazing. And the next thing you actually want is, all I ever want to do is, you know, put out your own album and have it on vinyl. And now that's happening. It's like, what's next? Like, you kind of like, you know, your mind gets so excited about what's to come.
Wembley Stadium.
But at the same time, like, we just like, you know, naturally as musicians and, you know, being in our 20s, we've got so much ambition to go on and do more and do a second album and play bigger shows. But at the same time, like, really going to try remember, like, remind myself in the next few days, I think we all will, it's just to really be proud of what we've done in this album of 10 songs and just be content with it and just get it out to as many people and get as many people to listen to it and just remember that it's all about the music, not about the figures and the gigs and, you know, the sales and that. So yeah, it's going to be fun, mate. I'm absolutely buzzing that you're coming down for the London launch party as well.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, I always say, oh, maybe I'll get to, you know, shake your hand one day, but I actually might get to shake your hand because the Hofer Anchor is not the biggest, you know, it's nice.
Definitely, mate.
Tiny little venue. Guys, yeah, best of luck. I can't wait until next week, and please play Need You More, Wayfinding, and Wide Asleep, and actually just play the album. No, best of luck with it, guys, and yeah, thank you very much.
Mate, thank you so much. So good to chat. I really appreciate the kind words, and yeah, mate, let's have a handshake and a pint next week.
Yeah.